Welcome to Game Study Hall. Hide your DS in a book and act like you're working. Tonight on the Dan and Guy Power Hour,
we discuss PAX Unplugged.
It's Game Study Hall.
So have you picked up anything on the autumn sale?
On Steam?
Yeah.
No, I don't bother partaking in the sales because I would just add to my backlog. Even though the Backlog 2020 initiative is going very well.
Is that have no backlog by 2020?
Yes, I've already completed 3 games since I started the Backlog 2020 initiative.
What are the 3 games?
It's nearly completed. Like, you know, one of them, I have like 3 things left to do in DLC, but Fire Emblem, Echoes. Like, let me get out the spreadsheet. Actually, the problem is I delete them from the spreadsheet after I beat them.
Hey, what? Why would you?
Because the spreadsheet only shows active games.
Why would you have a second tab that is completed games?
Because I'm not going to add every single game I already own to the spreadsheet. That's ridiculous. Just a second. Let me look over at the shelf.
I mean, I didn't add movies I've seen in the past to my movie scene list, but I keep it updated going forward.
That's an incomplete list.
It is complete for the years in which it's kept. Well, it's actually not even complete for the years in which I've been keeping it.
So Fire Emblem Echoes, Sonic Mania, and, well, I guess technically Sonic Forces isn't like 100% yet either.
Wait, but
it's close though.
Having no backlog by 2020 implies that you will play games at a faster rate than people will produce them in the next 3 years?
It implies that I will play games faster than the rate of games I want to play will come out.
Well, and yeah, the games I find that
there aren't that many games that I like playing.
I guess you're right. If you don't pay a ton of attention to the news of stuff, then it'd be really easy to stay on top of the stuff you're super interested about. Yeah, that's the one flaw of like following people and like getting really excited about stuff. It's not a flaw. I always have something crazy to play. It's very exciting. Like I told you about Super Slime Arena, right?
No.
I played it at like a Boston Indie Dev Night. It's just like a Smash Brothers like 2D fighter game, but you can use just about any controller that's ever been made.
Oh yeah, you told me about that one. It's the DK Bongos and the...
Yeah, so like the match I played against someone using the Dreamcast Fishing Rod, DK Bongos, I think a Game & Watch was somewhere in there, and I was using the DJ Hero.
Not Game & Watch for self-contained.
It was some like early. It looked like a weird Tiger Electronics thing. I guess it must not have been because those are something.
Yes, a Game and Watch. Because a Game and Watch was 2 things. It was a game
and a watch,
and it was a watch.
Yeah.
But it was not a controller.
It looked like it had that aesthetic. It was some old thing. They had all these weird. The amount of like adapters and dongles were kind of crazy. But the DJ Hero controllers, pretty. Not terrible. Like, I won. I didn't win by a lot, but I beat the guy with the fishing rod, so that's what counts. But yeah, it's a fun, it's just a legitimately fun game, but it's also like a silly, interesting thing to do with all your extra controllers. And it also doesn't really add to your backlog. Like, you don't have to beat it. You just own it to play when people come over. Like Overcooked. You don't need to beat Overcooked, right?
That sounds like a quitter's excuse for, oh, well, it's not on my backlog.
I mean, I don't keep a backlog. Because
I do.
Yeah, well,
I have a spreadsheet.
And mine's like 900 games long, technically.
Mine's, well, okay, I guess it's technically 23 games long, but 3 of those games are basically like 100%ed. By the end of the weekend, those will be gone.
Do you know you like all these games? Like, have you played them a little bit?
I only buy games if I have intention to play and beat them. There are no games that I buy that I say, I wonder if I'll like this, I'll buy it. I only buy the game if I have intention to play and beat it.
Right, but like, some games just you think are going to be good, right?
I mean, that was what happened with Breath of the Wild, and now I'm more judicious with my purchases.
We're not going into this a third time. Our opinions of this are well documented.
I'm saying, though, like, that is, in fact, a perfect example. And you know what I still did? I still put in the time and 100%ed it. Because I'm buying a game, I'm beating that game. Okay? I paid money for it, I'm getting my money's worth.
But couldn't you look at it that you're paying
some
more...
cost fallacy?
Yeah.
I'm paying for entertainment? No, I'm paying to beat the game. I'm paying to get that sense of satisfaction I get when I take a game off my backlog. That sense of completion.
So, wait, by that logic, shouldn't you put more games in your backlog so you can beat more things, regardless of...
No, because a very high number in your backlog causes stress and anxiety. You want the number to be as low as possible. Ideally, I'll get it down to zero, and then I'll buy games that take like 3 seconds to beat them. And then, like, it's like the farm in Giga Carcassonne. First you build up the farm, then you spend the rest of the game farming the farm.
Oh, yeah, so, this last weekend, we, for the people, the listening audience, we played the
550 piece game of Carcassonne with like 11 expansions.
Two base games. So it was a base game added into the big box, which itself has a base game. Yes. And then you had a additional river and was it King and Thief?
No, expansion? I had Rivers 1, which came with my base game. I had Rivers 2, which came in a different expansion. I had the Count, the King and Robber, the Heretics and Shrines, the Tower, Inns
the Tower
and Traders.
The tower is really interesting.
Like basically, we had a lot.
Yeah.
It turns out the barn is already like crazy broken, even just base game plus barn. But in a Giga game, where you can have like 20 cities in a farm, and then you can just, the map is so big, you can just keep building onto that, you can quickly get into a kind of degenerative loop where every other turn is first I place a tile with a farmer. Next turn, I connect that tile to the original farm, and I rescore the farm. Then I place a tile with a farmer, connect it to the original farm. And this loop continues, and every other turn, you're getting 40 points. Or more if you've got pigs, and the pigs die.
Well, you only pick pig once.
No, you can't keep him in the farm the entire time.
I thought we figured out you pick it up.
No, he doesn't go up. He just stays down. That's the point.
Oh.
Yes, exactly. We should have been doing the 60. Like, it should have been even higher.
Yeah, well... Right, so the farms in Carcassonne are already kind of create like very swingy, and most games seem to come down to them. But this specifically because...
In a single player, in a base set game, like, there is that kind of, like, you know, you're building up, you know, your little stuff, and then...
There are only so many tiles.
One person maybe claims an early farm, and then later you realize, oh, geez, I need to get in on this. Or you realize, oh, my God, this farm isn't claimed. I can totally just claim it.
Right. Or someone claims the early farm, and you just deny them as hard as possible.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's a nice farm. Be a shame if just road, and there's your farm.
Well, that's the one thing, and the river kind of prevents that. It kind of protects the early farmer, because it connects to just so much greenery.
Just a second, I think George is crying. Remember how, like, when you last saw George, he had two teeth?
Yeah.
He now has four teeth.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Whenever you have teeth on one side but not the other, they quickly cut through the gums and free their, you know, mirror brethren.
At the bottom. But when...
He had the two on the bottom, and now he has two on the top as well.
That's probably awful, because... Then your mouth is lopsided, and it's going to keep...
Then every time you bite, you just cut the other side of your gums? Yes. But it turns out, like, that's kind of how teeth work. Because, you know, new one comes in, and then it cuts the hole at the top for its friend to come in.
No, I mean, so, like, if you have a tooth on your left side and not your right, wouldn't your...
They always come in symmetric.
Oh, really?
For the most part, like... You know, guy got his, you know, 3-year molar on one side, and then, like, within a week, the other one popped in. I'm sure there's, like, oddities of that not happening, but assuming, you know, you're completely normal.
Yeah, I never really thought about it, I guess. I've had teeth.
I mean, when your wisdom teeth came in.
Oh, mine fit. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, mine also fit, but they came in mirrored, yes?
I have no idea. I didn't even know they were in. I have no idea when they came in.
How do you not know your things are in?
because they came in so smoothly that just like.
Like, mine were really smooth. I still knew when they came in.
I mean, how? Like, I don't look into my mouth that way. Like,
you feel them.
So the only way I noticed was food starting caught in, like, the back corner of my mouth. Like, I eat, like, a pretzel. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. And, like, up until that moment, I had no idea. Yeah, I mean, I got really lucky. Because, like, almost everyone I know, I didn't, like, get them pulled or, like, super painful.
Nah, that's more of just, there's a market around wisdom teeth removal.
Yeah, so I did go to one dentist that, like, wasn't just, like, a random one near one of my apartments. And
they're always like, oh, I see if your wisdom teeth ever considered having those pulled.
Oh, no, they didn't even, I went there for a cleaning, and they're like, oh, and I'll schedule you for Tuesday. We pull your wisdom teeth out. I was like, what? They're like, I'll pull them on Tuesday. I go, they're good. They're like, oh, no, yeah, you get your teeth pulled. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, you gotta get them pulled.
Yeah, I was pretty angry. If they didn't have metal things in my mouth, I might have had more to say about it. But yeah, you do not argue with the people who have technically weapons near you.
I mean, it's a good thing you weren't like unconscious for some other procedure, and then they're like, "Oh, while we're in there, we took your teeth out."
Oh, I'd sue immediately.
Oh, yeah, I wonder though if dentists have any sort of like
Hippocratic oath.
Like, no, it's more like they could say, "Oh, well, his wisdom teeth were crooked, so it was like a health thing they could have impacted."
Oh, no, yeah, I mean, they'd win.
You'd sue, but they'd have just as good a defense.
Well, because when you go to the doctor, you just sign all the paperwork that essentially says they can do whatever they want, and I won't argue.
As long as it's for the, you know, the good of...
Well, I mean, look at it this way. When you go to the doctor, you don't even... They don't even tell you what they're charging you, and they'll just, like, add charges. And you can't...
Your insurance covers it, so who cares?
Well, if you don't have insurance...
Well, then you probably should tell them ahead of time, hey, I...
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, the system that handles it and the system that bills you are two different things. Like, I mean, I went to the doctor. I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm insurance. So, like, you do X, Y, Z. You're like, yeah, yeah, totally, totally. Like, you know, it sucks you don't have insurance, all this stuff. And they still, like, bill me an obscene amount of money. Yeah. Like, you know, if it's, like, one person... But any, like, actual organization, there's really nothing that you can do because billing is, like, they have a department that is billing, and they just have a job they do. Right? But yeah, so we were talking about Carcassonne.
Oh, yeah.
So I really like, I've only ever played Mega Games with two people.
Oh, yeah, so while we were at PAX, we played a Mega Game.
Well, we also played a mega game of Carcassonne just at your house.
Yes.
But we also played a mega game, which was...
Is that what you were talking about, the mega game at PAX?
I actually meant the mega game of Carcassonne, but that's...
Oh, we call that Giga Carcassonne. That's true, we did. To differentiate.
Yeah. But we played The World Turns Upside Down, which is the mega game about the Revolutionary War that you played, I'll say, like 8 months ago?
I want to say it was actually December of last year. Or no, maybe that was something else.
That would be like 11 months. I don't know. I could look up whenever we aired that episode. But
I thought it was last...
I mean, it was a while.
I thought I played it in December.
I mean, it was like episode 23 or something. But anyway, so this was my first Mega Game. And I played that one with you. It was... I don't remember. Was the last time you played this the first Mega Game you played?
No. They also did a space-themed one that wasn't Watch the Skies.
Was it designed by... So...
It was also designed by Stefan.
So, Stefan of Iron Mark Games, right?
Yes, Iron Mark Games.
Which, and I think... So this was the only Mega Game I played. I had fun, but it's a lot less game than I personally want. And I think we definitely talked about this last time that like our the role play is very strong.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in context makes a lot of sense because you know, because video games seem to take a really long time and the like emergent narratives come a lot easier from just accepting roleplay.
Yeah. I still think I'd like it if it was just like a 6-hour actual game.
Yeah, I think me and you would enjoy that. I think
we would. Normies wouldn't.
Not normies, but just like the average person.
Right? So normies.
Well, no, cause you got to think though the middle ground of the sort of person who'd even sign up for a mega game is someone who's very into some aspect of it, right? And I think I would wager that that sort of person is more likely to be more on the RP side and less on the, like, I'm okay playing a game that's just a spreadsheet side.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, it's the kind of people that would like the game of Puerto Rico, even though it has no visuals and it's just, you know, squares and text.
Yeah. Well, because you got to think, even the heaviest board game doesn't really, you know, it takes 3 hours at the longest, right? I don't think I've ever played a, like, really intense game.
Twilight Imperium?
I haven't played that since.
I've never, well, I played it once, but we didn't finish it.
Yeah, so I think I played it twice, but, like, a really long time ago, and with a very specific group of people. But yeah, so Twilight Imperium is up there. But that is the higher echelon of like length. I think it's even just a priming thing, right? Like if you play a game of D&D that generally takes a couple of hours. So I feel like there's a priming in that where like if you're signing up for something that's 6 hours, there's kind of like a mental expectation of what you're agreeing to. Because, like, if I invited someone over, be like, hey, you know, block out 4 hours, we're going to play a game. You know, if that game was Puerto Rico, they'd be like, I feel like they'd be like, what, why 4 hours? But if it was D&D, they'd be like, okay, cool, we're going to play D&D for 4 hours. Because I think D&D and then, you know, in a mega game that has heavy RP, I think there's enough, like, narrative shifts, you know, like rising action, tension, stuff like that, character arcs that you can keep a large group of people entertained. Because, like, a game of rules, I mean, we played it, so we were both British, and we played it mostly like a game of rules. And
yeah, we played it straight by the game of rules, and then our guys were consistently getting, you know, killed or blown up or turned around by colonists. They'd be like, well, I have my super ultimate power, or I use my super, and I lost this fight, well, I use my super, and now I win it. That's like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Oh, I mean, but supers are, those are part of the rules.
They that are, problem but you was, get those supers from, like, RP stuff.
Well, right, but also, that was a clerical era, and we weren't getting nearly the number of supers we were supposed to.
Oh, yeah, we were supposed to be getting one a turn, instead we got one
so, like, total. In, yeah, pretty much. But... Well, even more than that.
I do feel like, though, some people were too obsessed with, oh, I've got to get my super so I can do something with a harbor so I can win one battle.
Well, right, that's a problem with super moves in general, is that it's very easy to give you tunnel vision. Like, well, it's my super, yeah, so it's really good, so I should focus on this.
Except, you know, we're not fighting. It's like the amount of money we invested in harbors instead of forts. Like, forts are what win battles. Forts make it so you can only win on a six.
Well,
we lost fights because we were fighting in places with forts that the colonists built.
Well, I mean, counterpoint, though, if you know almost nothing about the game, you need to use something.
Knew harbors were bad just before we started because I read it. I'm like, we get our ships from the British. We don't build our ships. Why do we need harbors?
Right, but if you didn't read the rules and you just went to that, you know, intro session that was...
Yeah, you'd say, oh, I need to get harbors. And I'd be like, well, no.
Well, I mean, looking at your super is...
And I tried to be nice. I tried to, like, you know, accompany or accommodate them. Like, yeah, we can get a harbor. Like, I'm not going to say no. That's stupid. Because then I'm just, you know, that jerk that's, like, being bossy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a hard situation, right? Like, the expectation of... I mean, I do this when I play games where, like, you know, if my character card has something, generally I'll use that as the jumping off point for the rules of the game, more or less, right? So I can totally understand the situation where you would look at your super and be like, oh, harbors. Clearly, harbors are a thing we need to participate in.
No, harbors were a thing for colonists only, basically. We had all the ships we wanted from, you know, the motherland.
Right. Well, yeah. But also, but that ties exactly into my point where for a lot of it, I felt like I had nothing to do.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I felt like I was just getting overwhelmed because I was, again, Admiral Gage, and everyone was going and running things through me.
Well, we had to, and, right?
Yeah, but, like, you know, I would try to delegate, be like, okay, you go take care of South Carolina. Then next turn, the guy'd be like, okay, now what? I'd be like, go take care of South Carolina. You know, you'd have people asking me every turn.
Well, right, but and that's, but I feel like that's the line between, you know, heavy RP and heavy rule, like, rules by the book sort of thing, right? Like, heavy RP, you have to ask commanding officer. And rules of the, and then, but then playing heavy on rules, deferring to the person who's played before every turn feels like a good idea, right?
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, if it's the same situation, it's, okay, we need to take Georgia. And then I say that, next turn, we still haven't taken Georgia. It's like, well, okay, then go buy the troops and take Georgia. You know? You see, there's, you know, we own 3 of the 4 territories. You see where the troops are. Deploy some troops. Move them in. Take the last one.
Yeah, I'm just trying.
Like, I've got, like, 10 different notes I'm passing to people. I'm trying to micromanage a bunch of stuff.
I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm trying to play devil's advocate. Like, because pretty much all I did was move stuff. And then, so I started military, and then I got pushed over to the spy side.
Yeah, and when you were in the military, that was great, because I basically just said, go take care of Rhode Island, and I didn't have to worry about it, everything went great. Then you jumped to spy side, and I lost my, you know, good commander in the north, and then we lost the north.
Yeah, well, we lost everything. We got it just ran the jewels on us.
Yeah. Even when we used our crazy supers, like the king who can just capture an entire enemy army on one turn. And then they just deployed twice as many troops the next turn.
Yeah, and then we had that... So, I participated in one weird RP thing where...
Actually, no, we did do one RP thing, which and was like midway through the game, and that should have been the, like... So the first game, the one I played, like, months ago, we won because we RP'd. And I should have, that should have, and it was in my mind. Like, I even said that walking around. Yeah, no, hey, I gotta remember, RP is good. I told you that.
Yeah. No, yeah, you specifically said that to me, and I was like, yeah.
And then I fell for my own bait of just playing the game straight. Even though midway through the game, we're like, hey, can we just, like, bombard Boston Harbor?
Yeah.
And then we did, and it was super successful.
That was probably my favorite question, where I was just like, I just, like, raised my hand. I was like, can I just shoot at the harbor? Like, yeah, sure. Like, all right.
And we paid 5 money, and we did far more damage than, you know, the 1.6 artillery would have done if we had bought them and tried to roll. Like, RP is crazy powerful, and we even saw it mid-game, and that should have been the, hey, okay, we are going to be bombarding Boston Harbor every turn for the next X turns.
Yeah.
And so we did it exactly once.
Well, and the other problem, too, is I tried to also RP a, like, turn the French against the colonists thing, where I was like, I'll just send a note that is just 100% a lie. So, like, oh, the colonists are killing the French. What should we do about this? And everyone's like, oh, yeah, it's, like, everyone thought it was weird. But, like, oh, no, that's an interesting idea. Like, let's see where it goes. I'm like, hey, well, we can't just do it once, right? It has to be, like, a thing that keeps coming up. And then I got sent to the spy side. I was like, well, I guess this is over.
Yeah, I guess this idea died with me.
Apparently the entire war effort did.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to play this game against, like, myself, for lack of a better term. Like, if everyone was playing the game straight, like, war game, I think it'd be very, very interesting.
Well, I think in general, if everyone was playing a similar style, like, if you preferred RP, playing against someone that's doing heavy rules probably isn't fun. And, you know, the opposite being in the same case.
Well, it depends, though. If RP is so powerful that it can just overwhelm rules.
I don't think it's fun to win in a landslide, right? Like, the fun of games is that competition, that challenge.
Yeah, but did they win or lose in a landslide?
I mean, they won in a landslide. Well, but okay, yeah. But this comes into another side seriously, of this.
There was some back and forth with the Hearts and Minds for a while, and then I don't know what happened to...
We did have two... Well, they had so many more people that they were exponentially gaining resources from the spy game. But also, they told us a rule incorrectly in the spy game, and we were giving up a lot more than we needed to.
Oh, was that the cash or something? Yeah, I think that's also part of it. Like, the people running this, like, yes, it was people from Ironmark Games, but it also was people I'd never seen before. I wonder if they just got, like, generic enforcers to help run them, or
they weren't enforcers or something. They were definitely just attendees. They were, like, exhibitors. It was probably people they knew who did this.
Or it could have been, like, people from that, like, the mega game that were hosting the other mega game. Like, Stefan was helping them run theirs. They were helping Stefan run his.
Yeah. Well, so they all had exhibitor badges. So it wouldn't be crazy that... Because you can get, like, a bunch of exhibitor badges if Stefan just was like, hey, I need, you know, X people. I'll give you an exhibitor badge and to go to PAX. They were just like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like... You know, having several rules be incorrect and like there's nothing we could have done about it, like that's frustrating. But also, so like on one hand, so I'd say for like 99% of the game, I had like literally no idea what was going on, because like the dissemination of information was just so.
Now see, I liked the way you had to pass notes to get everything across.
Yeah, no, I like.
I feel like
that.
It's fun. It's flavor.
But at some point, every turn, there should be more of a, like, here are the things that, like, are happening in the sense
so
of a game.
So when I played in the Long Island one the first time, what they did was each year was 30 minutes, but then there was, like, a 5-minute kind of, like, break in between each year where they would kind of say, like, okay, last year was 1778, this is what happened, this is the state of the map. They wouldn't let you see it, but they would explain it, like, and, you know, and the British made some gains in the north, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
like,
well...
there would be a brief, like, pause, basically, when you could kind of get your bearings, also when you could go to the bathroom, you know, that sort
well,
of thing.
Also, like... Yeah, and there was a lot of the time where I didn't know if the turn was still going on or not, but... So, the Fog of War is interesting. The whole, like, I don't 100% know what's going on, but it's also a game, and it's a long one. You don't want to spend the entire time having literally no idea what's going on.
Because... Yeah, see, like, I think an interesting thing, I don't know how it would work out, would be almost something like the generals never get to directly see the map. It's almost like only, like, scouts get to see it, and they have to report back what they saw. But I think that would get old very, very, very fast. And it would be very confusing very, very, very fast. And it would just come down to who can convey information the most accurately. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think that could be really fun if that was the core mechanic.
Yeah.
I think my issue is there was too many points of obfuscation. And because of that... So, like, even the game that you are currently... Like, your section, even that, you don't know all the information... So it's hard to follow what's going on. It's hard to develop, like, a really interesting narrative.
Actually, you know what I think would be an interesting thing? If they didn't change anything, but they just made it so spies can always look at the map, 100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or even just...
Like, that's just... Spies can always see the map. It's like, you can...
So, like, that totally matches thematically, but even in the sense of just... Yes. The portions of the game that you can't participate in... You should have a lot more knowledge of, I feel like. Because I think totally okay to just be like, hey, here's the deal. Don't use this information. Like, don't. These are the things that your character doesn't know. I think it's totally okay to just be like, don't be a dick. right? Because everyone's, you're playing, you're not, you know, you want to win, you're trying to win, but you're not playing to, you know.
Well, I mean, if your character doesn't know it, and your character doesn't need to know it, why do you need to know it?
So you can develop a narrative of the game that you're participating in.
I feel like that's more for after the fact you can learn about it.
No, because like when the game ended, I was just like, cool, you know, it ended, we lost, I had fun, but I think it would have been way more interesting.
Well, that's kind of the, like I said, if there was a 5-minute, you know, where they said, this is what's been happening, like, you know, that would kind of help you with the narrative.
Well, there was, he did do, like, those announcements.
Yeah, but he didn't do many of them.
Yeah, but also it's, I don't know, it might have just been a result of, like, the position that I specifically was in, and also having switching roles, like, in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, that said, I had fun. Like,
yeah, well,
if they host this at another PAX, I will definitely partake. So it doesn't interfere with something I really, really want to do that I haven't done before. But
yeah, no, yeah, I was
usually enough.
I was very excited to play in the Mega game. I had a lot of fun. I mean, things can always be better, and especially this close to it, there's like a million things where you're like, oh, that would have been, you know, I think less people would have been fun, but also just. The number, I felt like there was a huge number imbalance, that, and that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe change it from, like, 4-1 to 3-1.
We talked about this, like, in the ride back, where I feel like the British shouldn't be struggling for actions. Or, I'm sorry, no.
The British should be struggling for actions.
Yeah, the British
the
struggle for actions.
Should be struggling for resources.
Yeah.
The problem is the colonists had so many people that they were able to get all the resources they needed.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
so, like, the spy game, which was this... So, the spy game was colonists go first, everyone on their team gets to take an action, then everyone on our team gets to take an action, and then it keeps going for the duration. But there's twice as many of them, and they go first, they just, you know, crush the board. We try to, like, fix a little bit, and then they go again... And then time's up because there's so many of them. So they were all getting to go twice. We were getting to go maybe once. And they were just raking resources in. That being said, it was really crazy. It was stacks of face-down cards, and we were, like, drawing some and, like, raiding the decks and trying to, like, steal resources and not, like, hit ambushes and stuff. It was a really fun idea. But... I feel like that specifically, the number game, it broke down really fast. Like, in that circumstance, I feel like each side getting X actions, so even if there's less spies, just do more things. Because there was also, like, an action resource. Not everything took an action point, but you had 2 action points that you could spend on very specific things.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So, like, the stuff that colonists have to spend actions on, they have to... The stuff, like, just building and deploying isn't an action for us.
Yeah.
But then, like, maybe something bigger is an action. Or, like, even what if just British just got, like, a free move and deploy? Like, one free move and deploy?
Yeah, or even just, like, a more passive actions that were, like... This person is really good at this thing, right? This person can move 3
units.
Yeah,
like,
my units.
Superpower was I could move 2 boats.
Yeah. Yeah, boats were... you can move 1 boat. You can move it a bunch of spaces, but you can only move 1 boat. Like, okay, I guess. Yeah.
Like, it used to be boats could only move 1 space, and you could only move 1 boat. So boats were basically just stuck wherever they spawned.
Yeah, and also, we had complete sea... superiority, and it just didn't matter.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, we should have used it for more.
Right, we should have done more bombardments.
Bombarding stuff, yeah.
More
we didn't do what we could have with.
Now we know. I would be very interested to play someone else's Mega game as, like, a comparison.
tell the truth, I kind of want to play the Alien Mega Game again. I want to play the Stefan one. Also, Stefan, before, like when he was first developing the Mega Games, he ran like a mini version of Watch the Skies at his house, and it was like 20 people, and it was only for like, it was like a dinner party kind of thing. I kind of want to just play like the Watch the Skies again, because I feel like that could be cool too. Especially because, you know, it's been played so many times that, you know, a lot of the imbalances are worked out, so to speak.
Yeah, I watched some of the Shelton sit down of the Watch the Skies, which is like everyone's big like endpoint. They did a really good job with it, but I think that specifically kind of plays into the problem because
when you're making your own, you have to kind of go through the growing pains of getting everything perfect. Whereas when you're playing the one that's been worked out perfectly, it's already perfect.
Oh, I don't even mean that. I mean like that video specifically, like those guys are already interesting to watch. So there's, you know, there's this skew of like the game's interesting, the idea's interesting, but they're also just you know, interesting to watch. Or it's like, is it a confirmation bias?
Oh, what do you mean? Like the game itself is interesting to watch?
Yeah, okay, so I'll link the video, but the Shove and Sit Down, who are like the board game, I don't even know what they are reviewers, but they're like, they do a bunch of stuff. They're very interesting. But they have a video where they play Watch the Skies, and it's awesome. The game sounds awesome, but I worry if it's a confirmation bias of just because they're interesting to watch that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know, if people are just, it's not that the game is good. It's that the people playing it are good. And so it's just entertaining.
Yeah.
Like they could go play Monopoly and it would still be entertaining to watch.
Right. And having not played Watch the Skies, I think you're the only person I know who's any experience with it. If you played it, that didn't
work. And even then, it was like a you know, an abridged version just to test out some mega game mechanics.
Yeah. I really want to play. I'm sure it exists, but I'd love to play a Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I think it's hosted in a lot of places at this point. Like, you could just do a search for...
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. I meant, like, this specifically a BSG-themed mega game.
Oh.
Like, I'm sure one exists, but I'd have to Google it.
I mean, someone would have had to have made it. I mean, I actually, technically, now that you think about it, right, the Contact Light mega game, the first Stefan one, was kind of BSG-ish, where, like, the main planet dies and the people have to go out and find a new planet. But there's no Cylons.
Oh, it's not a versus mega game?
No, it's a, like, I mean, there's different, like, factions of humans, but it's mostly about working together to...
Wait, it's a cooperative mega game?
I mean, it's not cooperative. There's, like, you can all die together.
Right, but you're all working to the same end?
Yes, but you're also trying to achieve a personal victory for your, like, faction.
Right. Okay, so you're trying to be the best. You're not trying to defeat him.
I mean, I think some of the factions had a win condition of, and the other faction that were, like, blood to feud enemies with must die. Like, they must be completely eliminated.
Okay. Yeah, I'm all... Without looking at the rules, there's no way to
know. Yeah, I mean, it was only played once. Like, they made them... They made American Revolution mega game and, you know, kind of took off from there. I think because they felt like it could be sold.
It's also easier to, like, identify with. You, like,
yeah,
immediately understand, like...
Yeah, exactly what the American Revolution is.
Yeah.
You could say it's, like, an educational thing for, like, schools, field trips on weekends.
Yeah, well, it's also just a theme that you really don't need to worry about someone being like, I don't like space. Like, if you're in America and you're like, I don't like America, like,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're free to not like America.
No, I just mean that, like, not yeah. I don't like America, but, like, I don't care.
It's far more people like America than like space, we'll say.
Yeah, or at least have some sort of, like identity, like, understanding of it to, like, not feel like a fish out of water, which is very easy yeah. in the case of, like, a space game. Because, like, if you're not so, you know, if you don't watch sci-fi, you're not, like, you know, into, like, BSG or anything, a space game is going to be very alien. The intentional pun, so good. But yeah, and then also, I mean, they talked about it a bunch, but the, you know, the link to Hamilton is also just really solid as, like, a point of reference. Like, you know, Hamilton's super popular for good reason.
I mean, Alexander Hamilton was a shill for big banks. I don't see why he's popular.
Because he apparently was an excellent rapper.
He was an excellent what?
Rapper? I mean, you know what the Hamilton musical is, right?
No, I actually don't. I just assumed it was about his life.
Oh, yeah, it is a musical about his life. It's like a...
But, like, do they play him up as a good guy?
No, I think they're largely accurate to the, like, historical moments that matter. I mean, I've never seen it. I've only listened to the music. But it's, as far as I know, it's all, there's no lies.
Are there withheld truths?
I think all the withheld truths are, like, racial things.
He wasn't a slave owner.
I mean, well, he also wasn't black, right? Like,
they got a black guy to play him?
Only Hamilton music. I think most of the cast is black.
Oh. I mean, was that just because those were the actors there?
No. Oh, Lin-Manuel Miranda plays... I didn't realize he played Hamilton.
Who?
He, I believe, is Hispanic.
Okay.
I
mean, Alexander Hamilton wasn't Hispanic either. Right. He was British.
Aaron Burr is played by Leslie Odom Jr. Why is there not just like... I don't know. There's remarkably few good cast pictures. But yeah, it's like in the style of hip-hop. It's very good.
I don't like Alexander Hamilton.
Do you like American history?
Yeah, but I don't like Alexander Hamilton.
I mean, you don't have to like someone to be interested in the events surrounding them. Right? But either way, it's... Regardless of our opinions of it, it is... popular, so an American Revolution themed mega game is pretty good timing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would very much like to play another one. I mean, I would like to play that one again also. Again, you know, with less people. That room was fairly packed. So wait,
maybe we'll play it.
I'm curious, did you, in just like a knee-jerk reaction, which time did you enjoy it more? Like, did you feel like you were more involved?
I mean, the first time, when we won.
Did you also feel like you were more, well, I guess you played the Admiral both times.
I played the Admiral in both times, yes.
Yeah, I think my one, like, obviously, I have a bunch of nitpicks, but like my one real complaint is that for most of it, I felt like I had nothing to do.
You felt like what?
I had nothing to do. Like all my actions were very just like, okay, I move this thing, and like that's 100% of my turn. which, you know, turns were faster would be okay. But, like, there were a couple times where I was just sitting around for, you know, like, 15 minutes. That definitely was my favorite part of PAX. Okay, so, right, I don't even think, so this was PAX Unplugged, not,
yeah.
Which, the first PAX Unplugged, I'm curious to see what they do with next year.
You know, so I was initially worried that PAX Unplugged was going to have the MTV, MTV2 problem of, it would start out as a, you know, PAX Unplugged, and then they would incorporate more and more of the, like, base PAX stuff, like the Vidya and everything else. And, you know, by the end of the weekend, I, in fact, felt the opposite. I hope that it gets the MTV2 problem, because I feel like a board game only PAX, it's just, it doesn't have enough.
I think the point we agreed pretty strongly on is just, The problem with board games is there's really no way to just kill 10 minutes.
Yes, exactly. Not 10, but like 30 minutes, we'll say. Like, you might be able to check out a short game, or you might be able to bring your own, but, like, it really comes down to...
Yeah, well, like, so if you didn't bring games with you, or you, like, didn't bring a short game with you, there's no way you'd be lucky, you know, if you were able to check out a game in less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, also lucky that, you know, they even have a short game available that you want to play. Because their board game selection library is about the same as it was at all the other PAXs.
Yeah, that was definitely, like, the straight PAX tabletop library, but they're trying to service a lot more people.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you do?
Yeah, like, I don't think it needs video game. Like, I don't think it needs the MTV2 problem of, like, you know, let's have digital board games or whatever.
No, I think, honestly, I think the MTV2 problem of let's just make another PAX.
Yeah, which is why I'm, like, super curious to see what ends up happening with this, where, you know, if more people shared the sentiment or not. Especially,
when they send out the, like, what did you think of PAX Unplugged email, I will fill it out.
Oh, yeah, I'm not getting one of those, am I?
No, I am, because I'm the one who bought the tickets.
Yeah,
it really makes you think, doesn't it? Yes. Yes, it really does.
Have you figured out what that's from yet? Because it's driving me nuts. You haven't, have you?
I haven't. I haven't taken the time.
But also, I mean, like, I'll point out, this is the first PAX that I've actually attended. So...
Oh, yeah. As an actual attendee.
Yeah, like... You know, it's weird, because in all the other ones, you never really get bored, because... There's always some obligation that I have to, like, fulfill or something on my schedule.
You're working as an enforcer.
Yeah, like, most of my days, you know, taken up or I... And, like, we left Sunday. Like, we just didn't even go.
Yeah, my everything hurt. I still haven't seen a podiatrist. I need to get...
And does your foot still hurt?
Shoe inserts. My ankles, knees, and hips hurt, yes, when I do not have proper arch support.
Yeah. All right, old man. But yeah, I'm like...
Yeah, actually this started in the ninth grade, so young whippersnapper.
But anyway, point being that we got there Thursday night, PAX started Friday, went Friday, Saturday, and then just went home on Sunday instead of going to the third day of PAX. And I did not feel like I missed anything. Like, I felt like I got enough PAX. Although, to be fair, we did then also just go home and play a bunch of board games. So, I don't know what that says.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, like, I mean, so in all the other ones, so much of my time's eaten up, and then, like, and I still have something to do Sunday, like...
Yeah, you haven't even touched some facet of PAX, so it ends, and you're like, oh man, it was just getting started.
Yeah. But this time, I was just like, yeah, I've had enough. And, you know, essentially now, like, the main passes are now 4 days.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
I mean, I think this is the first year I'm not going east. Like, I haven't looked at the academic calendar, but I don't think I'll have time. But also, living in Boston and then moving to Buffalo, I'm not going to want, like, I'm not going to want to travel.
Yeah, there's a big difference between, going to the place where you know, being able to go home to your own home each night and being able to
wake up, eat my normal breakfast, go home, eat my normal dinner. But yeah, just making like a normal everyday, just commute on the train to the convention versus getting a hotel and traveling from Buffalo to Boston versus just, sitting on the T. But also, at this point, I've now been Unplugged was my 10th PAX. I'm kind of getting wary of it.
I mean, I'm not. I think if you have the right people there, you will.
Well, right. So, friends make everything fun. But I think the point at which I'm wary is I don't need. PAX is cool because you guys from Buffalo come down and, we play games. Yeah. But I'll be in Buffalo, so I'll see you guys. And I'm going to visit Boston all the time to see my other friends,
Well, I was going to say, visiting Boston, if you don't visit Boston very often, that would be it, but...
Right, but all my friends are, own houses and stuff. I'm pretty much come and go as I please. But also, I don't know what I'm going to do. I just don't really want to move out of Boston. But PAX is not the thing that's going to get me like that.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed all my... I mean, even Unplugged, that I felt like there wasn't a ton of to do, I still had, a great time. Despite, Philly's not easy to get to. I had to carpool with strangers to get down.
That's just because you don't have a, car.
Yeah. So I carpooled with strangers. Really thought I was going to die.
I feel like, again, that's not a problem for the vast majority of people for whom they own a car.
I don't think the vast majority of people own a car.
Yeah, it's basically, mandatory to own a car outside of, two cities in America.
I guess, you're right, Rochester's driving city. I would never live in a city that I'd drive in. It's why I'll never move to LA, ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, an outrageous requirement to say, you must own a car.
That's a pretty outrageous, that is a deal breaker. I won't move to a place where I have to drive.
And yet you're going to be living in a place where you have to drive for years.
No. I don't have to drive in Buffalo.
You're going
to
be living in Buffalo.
Why would I have to drive? Where am I driving to?
I don't know. Getting food?
Get on the bus. The bus goes
Does Buffalo actually have a full bus schedule?
The UB shuttle goes to South Campus.
And then what, you'll just walk to Tops?
Yeah, it's put, 2 blocks away.
I mean, I guess I just drive to the grocery store and get food because,
I mean, the owning a car just to get groceries is kind of dumb. Also, I'll just Amazon groceries.
You can't get fresh things from Amazon.
You can.
You can't get, meat.
You can.
You cannot order meat on Amazon.
There is a service where they mail you fish. The Blue Apron service, they're mailing you, fish and meat and shit.
Okay, I want you to, right this second, link me to where I can buy 1 pound of ground beef. I would like to purchase 1 pound of ground beef.
All right.
Link me to this.
Let's...
I'm calling your bluff in real time.
And there.
Blue Apron.
Yeah, they mail you. But also, if you want specifically just a pound of meat.
What's inside your delivery?
So, Blue Apron's like that.
No, this is Apron.
We're not. So we're not supported
where
by them.
Where is the M?
Don't purchase their service until...
Currently unavailable.
Blue Apron's not available this for you?
No, the lean ground beef is unavailable for me.
No, it's available for me. Which is probably why it showed up in my search. So that's probably confirmation bias.
Item can only be shipped within the U.S.
But yeah, also, I know you, so I'm good. You got a car.
Yeah, but I'm also down in Orchard Park, so, like, I'm not necessarily going to drive the 23 minutes up there just when you say, guy, I need to go grocery shopping.
Yeah, but you will for board games.
It depends on what day of the week it is. Probably not during the week, because, I got to worry about, like, I got to work the next day. I don't want to stay out late.
If I see you less... If I move to Buffalo and see you less than I do now, I'm going to be a little upset.
I mean, you only see me now, like, twice a year, so it'll be at least more than that. I usually get over to Merrimack around once a month.
Guess we'll see.
I invite people over. It's just, they're all too lazy to come over. And, you don't have a car, so... See, if you had a car, you'd be able to drive to my place. It's a lot easier for me to do stuff when it's, at my own house.
Yeah, well, that's how everyone feels.
Yeah. It's so easy.
Hostage is being taken. Don't take my hostage. Fuck me. Fuck. Oh, but we didn't play. Did we play any new things? At Unplugged.
No, we didn't.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
We played a lot of Terraforming Mars.
Yeah.
I got PvP'd so hard.
It's because PvP is good in that game.
Well, it's also. It was this weird perfect storm of playing as three people knew each other, and also I was the only one who...
Oh, wait, they knew each other?
Yeah, all three of them knew each other.
Oh, well, that's why they PvP'd you. You were the odd man out.
I also, every PvP they played, I was the only legal target. Did not help. And I don't know if they specifically chose those cards to PvP me, or it was a coincidence.
I mean,
but either way, I got hurt.
PvP cards are usually pretty good.
Yeah. Well, like, the guy at the Miner's Guild had the, like, take a steel production, get a steel production. And it's like, well, you're the only one with steel production. Like, yep.
It's your own fault for expanding early.
I mean, I guess I could have done nothing. That
you could have built on your ground game.
With what resources?
Your starting resources.
And then build nothing after that? Like, a steel is so good. How could I know he'd have the steel PvP code?
Because it hasn't been played yet.
There's like 600 cards in that deck.
There's 200 cards in the base deck.
Wait, is that really it? Oh, the sleeves are just really big. I mean, Because the deck looks so gigantic. It's the sleeves.
Yeah, it was actually, I was stunned to see how
small it is,
tiny it is. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. When you don't sleeve your cards, it's actually, like, super tiny.
I mean, you also have those really thick, heavy-duty sleeves.
Yeah, Ultra Pros. Yeah.
I just have infinity of those penny sleeves.
Yeah, if anyone from Ultra Pro is listening to this, we will wholeheartedly endorse you if you send us sleeves.
I think, like, half the planet would willingly, like, accept their endorsement.
Oh my god, Ultra Pro is so good. No, they're, I mean, thing is, I've got to get card protector, like, sleeves. You've seen these, right? Like, the card protector sleeves.
Yeah, well,
so you can protect your sleeves.
I knew someone who did, like, a vintage Magic, which is, like, you can play with, like, boxes and shit. He had three sets of sleeves, and then, or no, he had two sets of sleeves, and then they were in those hard plastic.
Oh, the hard plastic one? Yeah.
I'm technically not for legal. Displaying cards. I mean, they're marked, but it was funny enough that it was just cool to see.
I mean, are those hard plastic ones marked?
They're marked because they're not the size of the card, so they can shift around a little bit, meaning you could orient your deck in a way that you would know what's what.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I guess I'm not good at cheating.
Yeah, I don't play anything competitively to, like, care. I show up to Magic events with, like, unsleeved decks. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. Although I do, pretty much for that same reason, though, I have a lot of penny sleeve, you know, like, a dollar for 100. Because that way they're all uniform. So I used to have, like, a bunch of different kinds. And then you have, like, three of one color and four of a different color, and that's not useful.
You can't have that.
Yeah, but you can't get the clear ones, though. Or, like, in terms of, like, Ultra Pro, I'm not gonna get the clear ones, because then I have to, they all have to have the same, the cards I'm sleeving all have to have the same back for that to work.
Do your cards not have the same back?
Well, I played a lot of L5R, and I forgot when this happened, but their original card backs were five interlocking rings, and they got sued by the Olympics. So they had to change all their card backs.
Huh.
Yeah. It's really dumb, but, like, there's nothing to do about it. But yeah, so I needed solid colors. And then once you have some solid colors, you just go all solid color. But then you go to buy sleeves, and suddenly, like, the color you need's out. You need them sleeves.
Yeah, I just get Ultra Pro clears. Looks so nice. I love sleeves.
I know, I mean, sleeves are great. Like, if you have the option to go clear, then yeah. Although, I also, they're really nice for prototypes, too, because I use, it's like when I'm making prototypes of games, I sleeve Magic cards backwards and then put index cards in. And then, yeah. Well, it's nice, because then all the cards are the same size, they all have it, like, you know, they're all sturdy. But then they're also all uniform in the back, and you can just change text willy-nilly to, like, try stuff out. It's really nice. But you can use clear backs, and then just, you know, sometimes you see the, like, paper on the sides, which is ultimately fine, because it's a prototype anyway. But, I like going solid. Oh, fuck. Yeah. So, I've had to... Do you watch... You don't watch a lot of YouTube videos, right?
I do not, no.
Actually,
not to completely change the subject, but it just kind of dawned on me, because kind of hit a little bit of an aftertaste, but you've been to TGI Fridays, yes?
Yeah.
The restaurant?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how they have the unlimited appetizers?
No, I did not know that.
Okay, they have unlimited appetizers. We went to like dinner there, and I got the unlimited mozzarella sticks.
So you had mozzarella sticks there?
Yeah, it was 10 hours ago, and I just had a little bit of a burp up, and it still tasted good on the way up. Oh my god, they taste so good.
Ew. That's
I know food that tastes good 10 hours later.
Yeah.
Like normally after 10 hours, your stomach acids have just turned it into like, oh god, I burped. I need to brush my teeth. Nope. I don't know what kind of plastic I just ate, but it's still good 10 hours later.
Yeah, that's kind of concerning. Yeah. Also,
TGI Fridays does not sponsor us, but I wish they did.
I don't think I've ever had a good experience at a TGI Fridays. But I will change amend that opinion if we are sponsored. Because the one thing Dan likes is free food.
Oh my god, you eat way too much.
You don't eat like, anything. I don't understand how you're alive.
A 6-hour drive, you shouldn't have to stop for food 4 times.
No. Because you made us stop. I was ready to eat that protein bar.
No food in the car.
It's a solid hunk of sugar. Anyway. Whatever. You eat like nothing. Although I still regret that McDonald's we went to. Oh god. I mean, I
how about that Hard Rock Cafe though? That was so good.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised at how good that was. Like that was really good. And I don't know if it's just
there's
because
a Hard Rock Cafe in Niagara Falls, apparently.
I mean, that was the only Hard Rock Cafe I've ever been to. I don't know if it was good because it was the only like real food I ate all weekend.
Hmm.
And that's the other thing about going to a PAX in a different city. It's just like, oh, I guess I have to eat out. Because, you know, I can't go home.
I don't eat out very often, so for me it's like a pleasant treat.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I don't eat out super often, but I still don't like it. Being in a different city is also kind of weird, because, like, you know, Philly's a major city, and I've been to New York City and Boston so much that you're so used to just knowing the city you're in. But, like, I was walking around Philly, I was like, I'm fucking lost. Like, if I didn't have my phone on me, I would have gotten super lost. And I definitely wandered into a bad neighborhood. Because, like, when I was waiting for you to come down, I went to go see Justice League. Also, don't see Justice League. It's fucking terrible. And I didn't think it was going to be good, but I wanted it to be good.
You didn't think it was going to be good, but you didn't expect it to be bad?
I was ready to be pleasantly surprised. These movies can't be terrible forever, right? Like, I mean, Law of Averages says they're going to get lucky at least once, right?
I think when you start with a bad foundation, a bad premise, no, it's just...
I mean, if you build a house enough times on a bad foundation and it keeps falling down, eventually all of those collapsed houses will be a good foundation.
No, that's not how building works.
Anyway, but my point being though, I was ready to like it and I didn't. Very sad. It has some good moments. But I'm also, I really like Superman, and I know I'm in like a minority right now, but I like my heroes to be super. But he has.
Okay.
Well. So there's a lot of, like, anti-hero characters in general, and people are very into, you know, human-type people with, like, flaws and problems and stuff. But I also enjoy a good, just, you know, truth, justice, and all that.
It's kind of like Skies of Arcadia. Like, sometimes you don't like brooding characters as the main character. You just want a happy-go-lucky, let's go on an adventure and stop the bad guys, and that's all it is.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Although Superman does have an absolutely amazing line where the main villain is going on some tirade, and he's like, you can't see the truth. And, like, I'm unstoppable. And Superman comes in from, like, off camera somewhere. And goes, I'm a big fan of truth. I really like truth. I'm also a big fan of justice. And just smashes him in the face. Such a good moment. Surrounded by an absolutely garbage film. It's a good thing I didn't pay money for that. Good old Movie Pass.
Yeah, how much do you pay for Movie
Pass? $10 a month.
And you can see one movie a day? Yep. Do they, like, not expect people to go to the movies more often than once a month?
No, according to what I read, they expect people to go about 3 times a year, like, with Movie Pass.
So they expect people to basically pay for Movie Pass, then forget to go to the movies.
Yeah, like a gym membership.
Yeah. When you, in fact, can go once a day.
Yeah.
I feel like the once a day is just inviting, like, it's inviting trouble. Why not go for the, like, once a week, even?
Because that's, it feels restrictive.
Oh, if you wanted to go, like, a Saturday, Sunday or something?
Yeah. Or, like, two things you want to see come out, and you're like, oh, I'll go see both of them, and then not go to anything else this month, right?
I've never had the issue of too many movies to see.
No, I mean, neither have I, but they're, you know, if you're, like, if you're an independent movie reviewer, right?
Oh, yeah, that probably is, like...
I mean, this is perfect for anyone who's doing, you know, any, like, consistent...
Yeah, reviewing. Like, if you're writing movie reviews for the local paper or something.
Yeah, well, right, I mean, even the local paper itself buying it for its reviewers, like, it's saving them money.
Well, is it tied to a person, or is it tied to a...
It's a card. I mean, in theory, you could pass... I think you're technically not supposed to pass around, but, you know, in theory, obviously.
At the same time, though, that's kind of like a business expense, right? You would just buy one for everyone in the office, because... You know, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Like, oh, $10 a month, and our viewers can see every movie?
Well, I mean, if you're, like, a newspaper who is buying Movie Pass for review, like, who's considering this as, like, an important purchase, you probably don't have that many reviewers.
I mean, it's something like, again, like, let's say, like, the Syracuse paper, like, the Post-Standard. I don't know how many people even get that paper. Probably not that many. I mean,
they probably don't have, you know, 5 movie reviewers, right?
No, they probably have one, you know...
One person who sometimes sees movies. Yeah.
Yeah, he sometimes sees movies. He sometimes goes to restaurants. He's just the reviewer. He reviews.
Well, I'm more likely that just everyone on staff, you know, contributes. Like, oh, I saw this, you know... There's, like, a list of things that they need to, like, review and see, and people just, like, pick the things that they're going to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I super dig it. Like, I recommend it to just about everyone I talk to. Like, for $10, it's very nice.
I don't see movies, so I have no reason to...
No, I really like... Well, I've always enjoyed going to the theater, but it's expensive, so I never go a lot, and every time I would go, I'd be like, oh, that's right, I actually really like doing this. And now I just can go, like, I don't even have to plan it. I just go casually. Like, if I get to Philly 5 hours early, I say, yeah, fuck it.
Like, oh, wait.
I'll go see a movie.
Yeah, it's almost like a daily spell. You can just choose to cast it to, you know, spend 3 hours.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I don't know what I would have done waiting for you. I guess I would have actually paid for a movie ticket, because, like, what else do you do in a city by yourself?
I mean, drive around.
I mean...
Oh, wait, no. You just get there the time you need to get there because you're the one driving.
Well, no, if you're meeting someone... Like, even if I was driving, you coming from Buffalo...
If I was meeting someone, I wouldn't get there 3 hours early.
I mean, like, if you got stuck in traffic... If we planned to arrive at the same time, one of us got stuck in traffic... Be really easy for the other person to arrive super, like, a different time, right?
I mean, hypothetically, if I knew you were getting there 3 hours later, I would just go check into the hotel, and then I would say, okay, just come right to the hotel. I'll be in the hotel playing video games.
Right, but, like, okay, the hotel's in your name. You get stuck in traffic. I'm there 3 hours early.
You could just check in under my name. Well, actually, the hotel is always in my name. I always put the hotel in my name so that this can't happen to me. It's the same reason why I always drive.
Right. But yes. In that circumstance, someone is still...
Yeah, but it's not me.
Yeah, well...
Like, this can't happen to me, because I make sure everything's, you know, revolving around me. As I am the center of the universe, of course, everything just kind of happens when I get there. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's, it's very nice. Like, $10, it's already cheaper than a movie ticket. I think I've seen 5 movies with it in the 2 months I've had it. So, like, I haven't gotten a ton, but, you know, I've gotten more than I paid for. And I've also mostly gone just kind of flippantly, which I feel like even gives it more utility. Because, like, some days I'm like, you know, I feel like seeing a movie right now. And I'll just check to see what the very next thing showing is. Just go see that. Like, I wouldn't have paid to see Blade Runner. I'm glad I saw it. It's bad, but...
Oh, I was actually going to say, I was going to ask you how that was.
Oh, it's terrible.
Really?
Yeah, like, I almost walked out.
Well, that's really disappointing.
Yeah. I've only ever walked out of one movie in my entire life. It was the second Matrix, and I almost walked out of Blade Runner. Although it has a great moment of non-diegetic sound, and I think it's an editing mistake, but I love the implication.
What happens?
So, you've seen the trailer? You know that, like...
No.
Wait, really?
I don't watch movies.
Anyway, so in the trailer, there's like a portion of the soundtrack, it's like this really slow piano score. Yeah. And, you know, it's just like a single note, like a ding, and then just low music or whatever. And there's a scene where Ryan Gosling, who is very good in this movie, he's just surrounded by a bad movie, where he's slowly walking around looking for someone, like walking through this empty building, and the soundtrack's playing. Piano note, you know, whatever, just stuff. And at one moment, as the piano note happens, he turns his head, like he snaps his head to look at a piano. I was like, wait a second. That could not have happened, right? Like, because
the piano wasn't playing that in
right,
real life,
obviously. Right, you know, it's the soundtrack. My theory is there was supposed to be there was like a CGI that was supposed to be put into that of like a shadow or something of like someone moving away, and it got missed in post, so it looks bonkers. But yeah, not good, obviously. But I really like the idea of, you know, like soundtrack that is and is not in the world of the movie. It's like the greatest fourth wall break in movie history, in the original Alien, which I'm now remembering you haven't seen, right?
No, I watched the first like 5 minutes and I'm like, nope, this is too spooky. No. Not for me. And I went into the back room and I played Sonic 3 and Knuckles while everyone else watched it.
So there's a moment in it where the cameraman knocks something over and the actor reacts to it. And
they kept it in?
Yeah. It's minor, but it's like once you notice it, it's super clear. And it's really interesting. Well,
what is it that happens?
The cameraman is on like a... He's got like a steady cam thing where he's tracking... He's walking around the actor who is walking around the ship. So he's like doing loops around him. And at one point, he backs down a hallway to get a shot and he bumps a wind chime. And when he bumps the wind chime, the actor snaps and looks at it. So he like looks almost directly at the camera at the wind chime moving. And if you consider that scene, it is physically impossible for that to have happened.
because there shouldn't be any wind on the wind chime.
Right, and obviously the cameraman doesn't exist in the world.
Yeah. But was the alien already on the ship at this
point? Yeah, this is toward the end of the movie.
So then it's like, oh god, the alien's close. Or, oh god, I'm going crazy.
Right. But, you know, it's like, in the real world, it's just, you know, an actor being very good about, like, not breaking character. But in the movie, stuff like that I find fascinating. And which is why I like that moment in Blade Runner, even though it's not good. Also, Blade Runner is guilty of, something to have a twist, the truth has to matter. Like, the truth of the twist needs to be important. And
what do you mean?
Like, if you were watching a movie and at the end someone comes and goes, "Ha! I was his father all along," and you're like, "Oh, I didn't know that was secret information."
Oh, is this like the thing where like people that don't understand what something's supposed to mean?
Yeah, it's sort of like that. Right. If you were someone who
you didn't understand what mysteries were because like you weren't good at logic, you couldn't follow things, so you just like you thought mysteries were just, oh, and then there's this surprise at the end. It's really cool.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So if you're someone who watches a movie with a twist and you never get the twist, you would think that movies just have these surprises.
Yeah.
Regardless of like what the information is in them. But yeah, Blade Runner, there's a turn, and I go, oh, I didn't know this mattered. Because, like, you know, it gets revealed, I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, oh, wait, why would I have known that? And the answer is, I shouldn't have, because it doesn't matter. Also, Harrison Ford is not a young man, and it is...
No, isn't he, like, 70?
I think he's in his early 80s.
8 now? Yeah.
There's a scene where he fights someone, and you know, like he punches them, and he looks like it looks like it hurt him.
Yeah, when a 70-year-old punches someone, it hurts their hands.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, good for him, he's still working, and like, you know, go get it, Harrison Ford, but just, you know, a little more movie magic, just a little more. And also, it wasn't, I'm pretty sure it wasn't, the audio wasn't mixed well, like, in general, because, so all of the dialogue was normal volume, like, totally what you would expect, but the soundtrack every now and then would get so loud that you would hear the speakers vibrating.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's not even like the theater had the speakers at, like, the wrong setting, because everything else was normal. And every now and then, 10-minute Inception noise at max volume. Also, this movie is riddled with not exactly the Inception noise, but a very similar, like, wah noise that they just, like, hold on for minutes on end. It's really annoying. Especially considering the movie I saw right before that was Dunkirk, which is amazing. That's the World War II movie by Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing you haven't seen, right?
Nope.
It's really good. Really, really good. I think it's something that kids should have to watch in school. You know, like, horrors of war thing. Of like, here's what not to do. Don't do this.
Don't go to war.
But just, I mean, empathy's a hard thing, especially for something like war, because there's really no analog. They can be, oh, well, you know, it's like this, or, you know, here, try on these boots. I think Dunkirk does a pretty good job of, like, giving you you know, the panic and anxiety. And like the first, I want to say like 20-ish minutes, there's almost no dialogue, and you're just watching a kid try to not get murdered.
Does he get murdered?
No, he's one of the main characters. Well, he doesn't get murdered in the first 20 minutes. But like,
well, that's good.
So, because the whole thing with Dunkirk is a bunch of Allied troops are stuck on this beach and they're trying to get off and, you know, get to safety, and the Germans are just, you know, pressing in it, like all around them and shelling them and, you know, aerial bombing runs. So everyone is just trying as hard as they can to get away.
Yeah.
It's very well done. Like, I'm just super impressed. And considering the last Nolan film I saw was Interstellar, which is also one of the best movies I've ever seen. Like, it's so good, I think I can never watch it again, just in case it doesn't hold up to how I felt about it the first time. And that is not something I very often believe. I think the only other thing I'm doing that for is Austin Powers, because I know that's not going to hold up 20 years later.
I mean, I don't know. I saw some clips of Austin Powers on the YouTube recently. They still gave me a giggle.
Yeah, but I mean, YouTube videos are always going to be like the isolated best stuff, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I loved those movies when I saw them. And I kind of don't want to, like, take the chance to, like, watch them and then be like, oh, this isn't good. Not that, I mean, you know, it wouldn't ruin it, but why even take that chance? Oh, but yeah, the point I was making, though, I went down some rabbit hole of YouTube at some point, and now it's just like a thing I do, like movie reviews, stuff like that. And YouTube is awash with bullshit about the latest Star Wars Battlefront game. But
oh yeah, I thought I heard something about this. Didn't EA lose their exclusivity license with the Star Wars IP or something?
I don't think they had an exclusivity license. There are a ton of Star Wars games coming out all the time.
Maybe it's just the Battlefront or something. I remember hearing EA lost some license of importance from this.
Oh, I have no idea. The only thing I care about, because it ties into that Game of Thrones conversation we had the other day, where people are pretty sure the trailer for that game revealed who Rey's parents are in Rey being the side character in
character
Force
from
Awakens.
7, right?
Yeah, she's like that one side character. Who?
Wait, I thought she was the main character.
No, the Stormtrooper is.
Oh, you see, I haven't even seen the trailer for 7, much less seen it, because Star Wars is dead.
Wait, you haven't seen Tired Stormtrooper? Or Sweaty Stormtrooper, or whatever they called him?
I did not watch any trailer for 7. I did not watch 7. I didn't watch the trailer for what I thought was 8, but it turns out it was Rogue One. Didn't watch Rogue One. Didn't watch the trailer for what's actually 8. And I haven't watched 8, because I think didn't 8 just come out?
No, Christmas time, I think? It's like next month.
Okay.
I'm surprised you didn't see the meme, though. So the like opening shot of the trailer for 7 is the Stormtrooper taking off his helmet and he's just like exhausted. He's like sweating I don't even remember what people were saying, but they were just making fun of how it's a very weird opening shot. But people, I think we've even had a similar argument, but I argue that in order to be a main character of a movie, you need to be a character. Like, you have to have an arc.
No, I think in order to be a good character of a movie.
Well, I...
There are plenty of movies that have bad characters.
Well, it's okay, but let's say you have two characters in a movie. One of them has a full arc, and one of them is just, you know, a Mary Sue. Which one of those is the main character?
I mean, probably the character with the full arc. Right.
So Finn has a full arc. He's a shithead, but he has a full arc. He just murders a... He murders a bunch of his friends.
Good for him. Star Wars is dead.
And so are his friends.
And so are his friends. I guess they had a Star War.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of support what they did with Seven, but I still didn't like it. Like, I think it was a good decision to just do four again. But that being said, I still thought it was a bad movie. And I didn't. Except for BB-8, doesn't count, because he's just John Ralphio with beeps and boops. Although, I also don't like Star Wars, so I don't really know where that puts me.
I mean, you're the one that's watched these movies. I haven't watched them.
All of the movies. I'm even rewatching Rogue One. Not sure why. Although, the Act 3 of Rogue One's pretty good. And by pretty good, I mean amazing. Also, Rogue One is in the universe that you're mad is dead, that isn't dead.
Star Wars is dead.
It was never good, so I'm not really sure what you were complaining about.
Well, alright, then I guess it's settled then.
It was never alive?
Yeah.
We've had this conversation before, but, I really don't understand. Technically Star Wars is the best it's ever been. They cut out all of the bad extended universe stuff. And they're just bringing back all the good stuff. I mean, your big thing was Thrawn, and he's a major part.
No, my big thing is why they have to cut it to begin with.
Because there was a lot of bad stuff. Like the Force-sensitive tree.
I thought they brought back the Force-sensitive tree.
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, I've never seen it. There's so much extended universe, and a lot of it's not good. Although they should totally bring back Death Troopers, which is the zombies on a Star Destroyer.
That seems like one of those non-canonical ones.
Yeah, I don't think it's canon. I mean, I think it's a published book, but it's not canon.
Well, some of the books were later made non-canonical if they interfered with A canon or B canon.
Although it did bring me into a conversation with, I don't remember who, but how a xenomorph would fare on a Star Destroyer.
The things from Alien? Yeah.
Which I realize now you've not seen any of the movies to even have an opinion.
Wouldn't it just get shot?
In theory... I mean, the real thing is, the Xenomorph is supposed to be, very good at stealth and, using its environment. But I actually think, more than anything...
How smart is it? Isn't it just an alien?
Are you implying that aliens are similar to...
Alright, so isn't it just it's a beast, right? It's a wild beast. It has it fights on instinct.
No, it's, it is of... at least a comparable intelligence to humans. Probably higher.
Okay, I
didn't realize
that. I assumed it was it was a beast, right? It was, it'd be no different than a tiger or something. It fights on instinct.
I don't think I'd want to fight a tiger.
No, but if I tasked you with hunting a tiger, and I gave you the full range of weapons that a human might have.
No, this would be more giving me...
You'll probably
actually,
win.
No, a better comparison would be full range of weapons. You have to go hunt a panther in the jungle at night.
Do I get night vision goggles?
You can have any weapon you want, but no utility.
Is fire a weapon?
Yes.
I burn the entire jungle down.
Where do you go?
I sit in the river.
It's not a polar panther.
What do you mean?
Like, it's not soluble in water.
No, I'm saying it's hard to burn when you're, like, mostly submerged in water.
What are you going to do when the panther shows up?
Well, once it's a big, wide opening, suddenly the advantage is on me. As a human.
With what weapon? You've expended your fire.
A gun.
Oh, you're taking two weapons now.
Yeah, I get a gun and fire.
No, you get a weapon.
A weapon? I don't get two weapons? All right, then I just hope the panther dies in the fire.
The problem there is... Right, so
for what it's worth,
you're funneling it specifically to you.
Indiscriminate burning of forests was actually a hunting technique used by Australian Aboriginals. That's part of the reason why they think parts of Australia are just straight desert. Like, they burnt down so much that it killed off... Yeah, because, like, you know, without roots there, it can't hold topsoil. Without topsoil, it becomes a desert.
But also,
like,
the
there's, like, fossilized stuff that implies there used to be trees here.
And also,
but it's like, well...
Fire would work because the panther doesn't know it's specifically there to kill you. In
exactly. Like, that thing's just going to get terrified out of its mind, even if it doesn't... You know, it'll probably die.
But yeah, but no, the big thing about the first movie is you really don't know anything about the alien. It's just a menace. It clearly exhibits...
I feel like... So for what it's worth, the phrase menace, I feel like I associate that with Dennis the Menace. And have you ever read a Dennis the Menace? He is hyper well-behaved compared to, like, a kid from the 80s. Like, much the same way Bart Simpson is no longer, like, a menace, and he's actually, like, a good role model for kids.
Bart's whole thing was just that he...
Don't have a cow, like, man. Cowabunga.
He didn't do anything crazy, right? Like, he just talked back.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he blew some
Dennis the Menace doesn't even talk back.
But who doesn't blow?
Like, Bart's worst prank was, like, didn't he shoplift once? He shoplifted Bone Storm.
Yeah, so he also, he blew Homer up.
He sawed off the head of a statue.
And he blew Homer up with the rupee.
The what?
He put the rupee, the beer in the paint shaker.
Oh, yeah.
That's the episode where Homer dies. Because that's like the last episode before it starts getting a little whimsical.
Because everything was actually just Homer's death dreams.
I'm sure, no, it's not that episode. It's the...
No, actually, that was a clip show episode, right? Like, he has memories from the past episodes.
Yeah, because he's in the hospital, so they're playing clips. But no, the episode where he dies is the blowfish, where he, like, eats the poison fish. That's the last one before it starts getting, like, weird and whimsical and awesome. So in the first movie, the xenomorph is just, like, the terror is the unknown unless you know very little about the alien, except that it is powerful. But it clearly exhibits a level of intelligence because it's able to use stealth tactics effectively, right?
I mean, there are, again, like, a panther can use stealth tactics.
I mean, a panther possesses intelligence. It's not dumb.
Yeah, but it's like it's using instinct, right? Like, it instinctively has these abilities.
I mean, most of what we do is instinctual and learned behaviors.
Yeah, I guess that is true, but I guess we just have a very high skill cap.
I kind of wonder what...
how much of humans are we actively learn, and how much are we just using, like, the lizard part of our brain that just fights entirely on instinct?
Oh, and... I was going to say, I wonder how much... I mean, I assume most of it is the result of complex language.
I mean, because we evolved complex language, we can do more.
Right, because complex language allows you to communicate ideas to someone else, which then allows you to share ideas, and thus exponentially...
pass ideas down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, because you can pass ideas down, but also experimentation becomes easier, and experimentation allows you to develop those skills, and, you know, so on and so forth. Like, we know other animals have languages, but we don't know the complexity of them, or when they developed them. And I wonder... I mean, it would make sense, but I'm sure there's an infinity other amount of reasons. But it's besides the point. The reason I think a xenomorph actually wouldn't do very well against Star Destroyer is its gestation is the chest burster. So, like, it attaches to someone, grows in them, and bursts out of their chest.
Yeah.
Accepting that someone gets infected, like, there is first contact, someone gets face hugged. If they don't take the armor off, I think it's stuck.
It's just stuck inside there. Like, the person keels over, and they're just like, oh, there's an alien inside there.
Yeah. Right, like, and so, I don't know if it would possess the ability to punch through Stormtrooper armor.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It has highly concentrated acid for blood, but I wonder if Stormtrooper armor is actually probably resistant to acid. Because you gotta think, space probably has a lot of, like, crazy corrosive things.
Yeah, I mean, well, can't Stormtrooper outfits survive in the vacuum of space?
Yeah. They're like vacuum.
Yeah, so it has to be able to resist who knows what could be out there.
Yeah, I do not think that. Well, actually, what are we talking about next time?
And next time in the Dan and Guy Power Hour, we discuss Super Mario Odyssey! Woohoo!
It's Games Turning Home.